Welcome back to Cool Science Radio. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with John Wells. We were just speaking with Dr. Jake Bleacher, who is the chief exploration scientist for NASA. Our next guest is science writer Marta Zaraska. She's written a new book. It's called Growing Young: How Friendship, Optimism, and Kindness Can Help You Live to 100. Now, this book is based on hundreds of research papers and on interviews with dozens of leading scientists from fields as diverse as molecular biochemistry, cyber psychology, and zoology. Do you want to live longer? Well, miracle diets, miracle foods, miracle supplements may not be the answer. But things like friendships and purpose in life, empathy and kindness. Now, science is showing us that these soft health drivers are often more powerful than diet and exercise. Marta Zaraska, welcome to Cool Science Radio. Great to have you.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
It's interesting because at first glance, Marta, your book looks like maybe a self-help book, but it's not at all. It is based on, as I said in the intro, a lot of science, and that's probably what drew you to the topic in the beginning, isn't it?
I mean, I am a science writer, as you said in the introduction, and I write for the Scientific American, the Washington Post. So in my daily job, I dig through thousands of research papers, and I saw a story emerging there more and more, exactly that, you know, we put our eyes in the wrong place. We are concentrating too much on diet and exercise and completely forgetting about the soft drivers of health and longevity, as empathy, friendship, optimism, your personality, for example. And so I wanted to investigate it even for myself.
So if we talk about at the most basic physiological level, when we get that feeling that we get by getting together with our friends, and I think that actually has stood out more for all of us since we've been so isolated the last 3 months. But getting together with our friends we know feels really good now. So what exactly happens physiologically?
So there are a lot of things that happen when you are with other people. So on one hand, you have a soup of social hormones, such as, for example, oxytocin, this famed love hormone. You have also serotonin, the feel-good hormone. You have endorphins as well. What also happens is that your stress systems, the ones that you have in your body, so the fight and flight response that we have evolved on the savannah, basically, it calms down. So you relax. Your stress hormones, such as cortisol or adrenaline, they kind of get calmed down, you could say. And so all these systems together of some certain areas of your brain as well are involved. Even the microbes in your guts are involved in all that. So all this together works to make you, on one hand, feel all warm and cozy and fuzzy, and on the other hand, also directly affects your health. So, for example, oxytocin has pain-killing properties. It has anti-inflammatory properties. So there are two sides to all the systems, emotional and very biological.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're having a conversation with Marta Zaraska, who has written Growing Young: How Friendship, Optimism, and Kindness Can Help You Live to 100. Marta, regarding oxytocin, you mentioned in your book that if two couples, or if a couple is fighting, if you spray oxytocin into their nostrils, it will make them more likely to reconcile and to be a little kinder to each other. Can you talk about that?
Oh, yes, totally. So there was actual experiment done exactly like that. It was done in Switzerland, where dozens of married couples were invited to the lab, and some of them got those sprays of oxytocin into their noses, and then they were instructed to pick up a topic that was very likely to make them fight. For example, talk about the kids, or about their mortgage, or about their in-laws, for example. And they were just supposed to discuss it. They were being stoned when it happened, and of course, lots of couples started fighting in the end. And the researchers could really see that those couples who received the boost of this oxytocin into their nostrils, they were much fighting much less nasty. So their facial expressions were different. They were more trusting to each other. And in the end, after the fight, they actually had less of the stress hormone cortisol circulating in their bodies. And we know also that cortisol has also some negative effects on your general health as well. So of course, it does not mean absolutely at all that you should go online right now and buy yourself some oxytocin sprays, because these things are completely uncertified, unchecked, and only used for research. But you can get oxytocin, for example, from holding hands or hugging as well, so in much more natural ways.
Well, I feel pretty good that Lynn and I, we have large social networks of friends, and we're both sort of romantics, not together, but we are, you know, that type of people. And, you know, those sorts of things. But there was one statistic in your book that I found sad. And you mentioned in the book that French people in their 30s and 40s, that 61% of them eat dinner with their family every night versus 24% in the United States. It's kind of It's kind of a sad statistic, isn't it?
I mean, it even gets worse, because in the American statistics, it wasn't actually specified whether these people are eating together at a table, or maybe they're eating together while watching TV, which, you know, is not really together. Whereas in the French statistics, it was very clear that it was sitting at a table, so not watching TV. And the difference is enormous. And, you know, when you think about it, we often talk about the Mediterranean diet and how it's really good for health, and we tend to fixate on how much olive oil there is, or how many grams of vegetables, and so on and so on. Whereas I think that Mediterranean diet, so the French diet, Italian diet, the Spanish diet, is also about how they eat, not only what they eat. So they eat with others, you know, they really spend time just sitting at a table and talking. It's a very important part of the culture, and I think it's a very important and forgotten part of the Mediterranean diet.
You make such a great point there. And I always get mixed up between the sympathetic and the parasympathetic nervous system. But the right type of nerves are sort of activated or de-energized when you are sitting around a table with the people that you love, having good conversation. And you make a really good point about sitting in front of the TV. I mean, what if we're sitting in front of the TV watching something like Breaking Bad, or I couldn't think of any other, you know, like stress-inducing sort of show to watch. But that, you know, it kind of affects our nervous system, the environment that we're in while we're eating, and that has a great effect on our health as well.
Yes, exactly, and it's something that we are completely forgetting about. You know, like really fixating on the kind of protein we're getting, or how many carbohydrates we are getting, or are we eating ancient grains, or, you know, or goji berries or whatever, and whether our food is organic. And we are completely forgetting that it's also about the connection that we get from eating. And I often say that it's much better to eat something, you know, more or less healthy with your friends than an organic kale salad by yourself in your car. So we are really overestimating the power of diet and underestimating the power of friendships and social connections to our health.
Yes, and you mentioned another couple things that I think are so important. And you talk a lot about Blue Zones, the book, first the article, then the book, written by Dan Buettner, I think is maybe how you pronounce his last name. But it talks about the blue zones are places on Earth where people tend to live very healthy lives to a very long age, and purpose, sense of purpose in life. You find 98-year-olds who are still working, you know, even out in the fields, but they feel so good because they have a sense of purpose. Can you talk to us about what that does in the body?
Yes, so that was especially important when I traveled in Japan. The sense, they call it the ikigai, so the reason for living. And of course, Japan is the longest living nation on the planet, and they actually recognize purpose in life as one of the most important drivers of health, to the point that the health minister of Japan actually calls ikigai or purpose in life as a health boosting strategy, official governmental strategy. So, and when you talk to people there, you know, they often talk about what makes their own ikigai, and it's usually something that also gives to others. So it's kind of the way you contribute to the society. And in Japan as well, it's very common for people to work after retirement as well, and they call those jobs, they don't continue in the same jobs they were before, but they find themselves new jobs. They call them silver hair jobs, much easier, much more relaxing. So for example, some kind of high-powered CEO can become a parking attendant or a public space gardener. And they do it for the sense of involvement in the society and the sense of purpose and being useful, basically. And they also say that it contributes to longevity. And this is actually confirmed by research as well.
Marta, you mentioned in the book the big three. Number one, committed romantic relationships will lower mortality risks by 49%. Number two, a large social network of friends can lower mortality risks by 45%. And number three, I have a question about, a conscientious personality will lower mortality risks by 44%. What is a conscientious personality and why is that important?
So conscientious personality, if you could make it into a pill, it would be probably a miracle drug. It would be, you know, better than aspirin for reducing heart disease. It's that powerful. And what it is this kind of tendency to pay your bills on time, to not be late for meetings, to keep your desk all nice and tidy. And to many people, it may sound boring, but actually research is extremely clear on that. That conscientiousness is one of the biggest predictors of health. And not only because people like that take their meds on time and show up to doctor's appointments, but there is also a purely biological side to it, which we don't completely understand yet, but it definitely exists and probably, again, has to do with our wiring for different social neurohormones and stress systems and so on and so on. And it makes us basically stay healthy and live longer.
Well, after the show, I'm going to go stop at the car wash, get my car washed and cleaned up a little bit, nice and neat. I'm also going to stop and get some oxytocin spray for...
Please don't.
Can you buy that?
Yes, you can. And I actually done that to myself. I described it in my book. I did feel all warm and fuzzy afterwards, but it might have been just placebo effect. I don't know. But definitely, please don't do that. Just get your hugs and look deeply into your beloved eyes. It also works very well in giving an oxytocin boost. Even you can stare into your dog's eyes. It also gives you an oxytocin boost. It's natural, safe, and with no side effects.
Well, that's good to hear. Pork chop's eyes. I mean, I look into his eyes all the time. He's all I got. So,
Pork Chop is the name of his dog. If you didn't figure that out yet, it's an unusual name, but a good one.
Yeah.
Well, it's so funny. You were talking before about the anti-inflammatory properties of things like oxytocin, and I love to hear that because in our diets, you know, for so long now, for the last decade, we've heard, you know, you want to center your diet around things that are going to be anti-inflammatory. And I just have to admit, you know, I love coffee. I'm just never going to give up my coffee. And it's inflammatory. So I think now that you've given me a way, as you give, you know, throughout your book of saying, well, I'm going to have my coffee and I'm going to find connections throughout the day with my coworkers, with, you know, John sitting across the board from me, with my family, and look into my dog's eyes, and it's going to balance it all out. It's going to be okay.
I'm certain, you know, that having coffee will hurt you much, much less than the potential benefits you can have from grabbing a coffee with a friend and having a chat. It's definitely much more important to your health than, you know, trying to avoid coffee than... That's probably more than going to balance itself out.
Lynn, I'm thinking that maybe we need to make a road trip to France and hang out with Marta a little bit.
You're welcome.
Now, where do you live in France?
Oh, it's a tiny little village on the border between Île-de-France and Normandy.
Oh, that sounds wonderful right about now.
It is pretty nice.
Yes. So. Volunteerism. You talked a little bit about these silver hair jobs, and a couple of weeks ago on the program we talked to someone about our wisdom years and leaving a legacy, returning in your later life to doing those things that gives you a sense of connection and purpose. And a way to do that is to look back throughout your life and identify those things that you really loved at some point in your life, but you sort of abandoned because there was food to put on the table and, you know, kids to get to school and all that sort of thing. And so I'm wondering if there's a message in there about how to look through your life now as we're living in it. Don't wait till our wisdom years, and to look at it as something that's going to in turn help us live healthier right now. And you do talk about this sort of thing in the book.
I mean, there's a very important part of it that, you know, we tend to start thinking about aging and longevity when we turn 60 or 70. And earlier on, we think about aging in terms of, do I have enough money saved for my retirement? But the truth is that we start aging even before we are born. You know, our telomeres actually shorten the fastest in our first 4 years of life. So whatever we are doing in our 20s, 30s, 40s, and so on really matters for our future health longevity. And it's not just the diet and exercise. It's also those social connections. So the strength of your friendships now matters for your future longevity. You know, there is research on children showing that their friendship, their conscientiousness matters for their future health longevity as well. So it's really, the earlier you start, the better. It's a waiting for retirement to start giving back. Of course, it's better than nothing, but it's just like waiting to start exercising when you're retired, you know?
Marta, what's the relationship between commitment phobia and health?
Yes, that's a good question, and it's not a very good one, unfortunately. So in general, as I've mentioned before, research shows that having this happy romantic relationship is really good for your health. So it's definitely more important even than diet and exercise. But the key here is commitment. So for example, when people just live together and they are really unsure where it's all going, it doesn't have the same effect. It has to be really committed. It doesn't necessarily require the official stamp and paper, but it does require the feeling that we are in it for good until death do us part. And it's probably because then we get the sense of trust and security, and which really calms all the stress systems in our body, that we can really relax and breathe out, and that's when we get all the health benefits.
And Marta, why is Botox possibly bad for longevity?
Yeah, that was something that I found absolutely fascinating. And the reason for that is something called the facial feedback. So basically when you move your face, when you're talking or expressing emotions, for example, try smiling. If you smile, if you force yourself to smile, you actually will feel happier after a while. Or if you frown, you will feel angrier. And this is not an illusion. Actually, studies confirm that it causes actual changes in our emotions and feelings. So when you get a Botox, then you cannot express certain emotions. Your face is paralyzed. And studies on people who have Parkinson's disease, for example, say that this kind of impairs their ability to express emotions. And it actually makes them have trouble keeping friends and having relationships. And then it can, of course, lead to all the cardiovascular problems down the road and so on. So it's all connected. You know, the fact that you cannot express emotions affects your relationships, affects your health. So I would not get a Botox, no matter how wrinkled I get.
that's funny. I was thinking of, well, couldn't you just use your words, you know, curse up a blue streak, as they say, or drop a bunch of F-bombs if you couldn't express your emotion. Let me ask about, you know, your research took you around the globe to some unexpected places, but I saw this, and during COVID, you know, everyone was, they were doing these online classes that they, you know, have been things that they've wanted to try. Well, I was looking for an African dance class that we could do at our home, and I never found a good one, or I never really found one that worked. But you talked to someone about Zulu dancing with Professor Robin Dunbar at Oxford. So tell us about what Robin Dunbar learned from hula dancing. Zulu dancing, yes. Sorry.
Yes, there was Zulu dancing, that's correct. He did it at one anthropological conference where all the scientists were invited to a workshop where they had to do exactly a type of African dance. And this dance was highly synchronized, and that was the important part here. So, and this led Professor Dunbar, he's known for his famous Dunbar number of how many friends one can have. And so it led his all research into synchrony, which shows basically that when people do things synchronously, so for example, when we line dance or when we sing in a choir or when we even jog together in synchrony with another person, the connection we get and the boost of the social hormones, for example, endorphins, is double that of what we normally would get. So, for example, if you just dance with people but everybody moves their own way, you still feel better, you still feel connected to them, but not as much as if you do things synchronously. It just gives you much, much higher boost of both emotional benefits and purely physiological, because those endorphins, for example, they are natural painkillers. So if you have a headache, you know, you can try some choir singing, for example.
Oh, I just love that. Well, your book is wonderful. It's Growing Young, How Friendship, Optimism, and Kindness Can Help You Live to 100. Our guest is Marta Zaraska. And Marta, before we let you go, in just 30 seconds left, wondering what is, since you've done this research and written your book, what is the single biggest change you've made in your own life?
So I think it's just change of perspective, you know, on what makes for a healthy life. I was always very health conscious and trying to eat healthy. I have a family, I'm a mom, I'm trying to make everybody, you know, eat their veggies and so on. And these days, for example, sometimes I still exercise regularly, I run, but sometimes I decide to give up on my runs and instead just sit on a couch with my husband and talk, even, you know, drink some unhealthy coffee. And I see it not as something as a sacrifice to my health routine. I actually see it as something that may be more important to my actual physical health than the run. So it's just a change of perspective.
That is very valuable. Marta Zaraska, again, the book Growing Young, How Friendship, Optimism, and Kindness Can Help You Live to 100. And thank you so much, Marta, for joining us here on Cool Science Radio.
Thank you, Marta.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
All right. Take care.